Good evening. Our duty, commitment, and service to God is to continue to fight the good fight. Welcome, and thank you for tuning in to NEA 2X Radio, the voice of the people, broadcasting out of D.C., and we do it all for you. We are profanity-free, strong, and determined to bring you the very best in information and awareness. Thank you to our sponsor, KD Contractors. They design, they build, and they renovate. Now, we have three very special guests today. Very happy to have them. And what makes them very special is what they are involved in, the work they do. First, we'd like to welcome Brenda Johnson, her attorney, Connie Regali, and Mrs. Maureen O'Neill Davis. Now, I want you to listen up like you haven't listened before. First and foremost, welcome and thank you for being here on the program today, ladies.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate it so much, Nia, and I appreciate the meeting that we were able to have with you in advance of this show so that we could tell you a little bit more about the work that we do and who we are, and you were so patient and kind, and, you know, we need all the help we can get. So before we even begin, I'm going to give an advance thank you to all of your listeners that hopefully after they listen to and hear what we have to say today, that they're going to be inspired to help. You know, we just need people in all kinds of capacities, as I'm sure everybody does in NAN as well. So I'm so happy to be here. So for your listeners, my name is Connie Regali. I have been an attorney for 30 years, working in Middle Tennessee and almost every county in Tennessee, as well as several states across the country. And in about 2015, I used the social media platform to build a grassroots lobbying organization, reaching out to parents and grandparents who have been adversely affected by the child welfare system, which to some people, if they've not been involved with it, it's also known as child protective services. So I started reaching out because as an attorney in private practice, I saw a lot of the just horrific abuses of parents and families. And I say within 3 degrees of separation, you probably know a family that's been affected. And I know of your listeners that they have probably had a family member or, I don't know, maybe it's the person who cuts their hair or somebody at the grocery store. But it's such a perverse and such a broad net them right now. 700,000 children are removed. I mean, these are American babies. American children are being removed from their family of origin every year.
Attorney Regali, that was your introduction, and we certainly want to come back and get into the facts. Let's introduce the other two and then go for what you know as far as this very, very serious situation unfolds. That was Attorney Connie Regali.
Well, thank you so much for having us. My name is Maureen O'Neill Davis. I run Family Forward Advocacy Connecticut in the state of Connecticut, and we work with families everywhere. I'm an advocate that comes alongside families during a child welfare or child protection investigation. We also work with families who are seeking special education services for their children who have experienced attachment disruption, which the foster care system delivers attachment disruption when they remove children, and certainly adopted children have suffered attachment disruption. And so we help families navigate child-serving systems, child protection being one of them. And I myself have had a situation to be involved with the child welfare system in seeking high-need care for my kinship-adopted daughter many years ago. And so I thank you very much for having me today, and I'll pass it over to Brenda.
Okay, and that was, again, Mrs. Maureen O'Neill Davis, and, again, she resides in Connecticut. And
so
lastly, go ahead, ma'am.
Okay, hello, my name is Brenda Johnson. I'm a mother, and I'm affected by the foster care system, and I'm out of Murfreesboro, Tennessee.
Yes, ma'am. Okay, ladies, I think the audience is kind of glued to the radio by now, because when you talk about child welfare, and as Attorney Regalee said, you know, this problem is extremely prevalent. It's a prevalent problem, but yet it appears to be on the down low. It doesn't seem to be the headliner when you look at the news, when you listen to information. And so that puts the majority of the population unaware. It's not that, you know, the majority, the media, a whole, you know, whoever, the media and others don't know about the problem. But it doesn't seem to be important to them to make sure we, the people, the majority, the population, knows about a problem. And the ladies that we have here today, oh, we want to listen up. And you want to listen like you haven't listened before, because I can guarantee you, if you have not come in contact with this system and believe that you could not come in contact with this system, this is the show for you. This is the show to make you aware, as well as ask to lend your time, your effort, your concern, your help, your support, because of how the system is run. Sure, we need systems to look out for children, but what they're going to share with you today, it has gone beyond the system just looking out for children. So let's go back to the attorney Connie Regalee, who has been involved for years. And she's right. I sat with her yesterday and others, and the horrendous information I heard, it almost sounds unbelievable. But this is the point. It is believable. I actually want to start with Ms. Johnson, who is in the system, and I also want to say, as her attorney, Ms. Regalee, if I ask a question that maybe you don't want your client to answer, feel free to interrupt me and say, we don't want to talk about that at this time, because I believe her case is still pending, so we certainly don't want to offer any information that could be used against her. Is that okay?
Yes, ma'am, absolutely. She's willing to talk and share her story because she knows that a lot of families are being affected by similar situations. Go ahead, Brenda.
It's just unbelievable. So what I want to say is, Brenda, you're here today with your attorney and guest, and as I understand it, you were home one evening and an unexpected knock to your door came, and from then until present, your world has transformed in an instant. In other words, you were home one evening, not expecting anyone, and then a knock came to your door. Is it okay if you start there, ma'am?
Okay. It was Saturday, March the 4th, and the police was called out my home for a domestic, I guess, dispute between my identical twin sister and I. And unknowingly, I had a truancy warrant out for my arrest. I obtained that truancy warrant because in January of this year, my mother had gotten sick out in Georgia, and my children and I went to her bedside. And while we were in Georgia, I was asking their school system if I could have their schoolwork. So it was suggested by counselors to enroll them either in a virtual school or home school, which I did both. But back to March the 4th, a truancy warrant was put out against me, and the police arrested me on truancy. Truancy is a Class C misdemeanor, which I should have been issued a citation, but the police department called their lieutenant, and they took me out on a truancy warrant, held me long enough in jail, 4 to 5 hours, while DCS came in and removed my three children. And it was two adults at the home when I was arrested. At the time of removal, it was four adults.
Go ahead. What happened after that?
That's shocking. That is shocking. That is shocking because it's bad enough you take me out on a Class C arrest. as Attorney Regalee can say what a Class C arrest is. And then you stated there were two other adults in your home. Did they tell you when they were taking you that we're going to remove your children? Did you have any idea that was going to happen?
No, I didn't. I wasn't aware that my kids were going to be removed. I was confused on why I was being arrested for truancy because I didn't know that that was a thing to be arrested for truancy. So when at the jail for 4 to 5 hours, I came back home. They told me to get out. I had to walk 7 miles without any shoes in a coat, without a coat. And when I arrived home close to 10 p.m. that night, my mom, my twin sister, her husband, and her ex-husband was in my home with their kids, but then my kids were gone. So I'm immediately asking them, hey, where are my kids? And I was told that they were taken by DCS.
That is wild and crazy, but true. How prevalent is this problem, attorney or Mrs. Maureen? How prevalent is this? Today is 2023. We're in September 2023. How easy could this happen to anyone?
Well, and of course, this opens the child, this whole discussion on the United States child welfare system. I mean, Brenda didn't get an opportunity to really describe her children to you, but I think it's important that people know she had three children. She had a 16-year-old son, a 14-year-old daughter, and a baby who was just 20 months old. They took her baby, who was 20 months old, who had really, except for daycare and stuff, had not been separated from his mother. And also in this process, her baby's arm got broken. They diagnosed her son with a mental health condition and put him on Prozac. And her daughter, who had complained about the abuse in foster home, was removed from her siblings and put in a group home. And Ms. Johnson has no idea where her daughter is. Now, I want people to just kind of imagine how serious that is for a moment, to lay your head down in your pillow night after night after night and have no idea where your children are, the children that you have taken care of. I mean, Ms. Johnson has a home. She has a job. She has a car. You know, she takes care of her children. They'd been going to the same school system for 7 years. Her son's in the choir. I mean, I don't want people to get the idea that perhaps this is a mom who was incompetent of raising her children, because she has all of the social and the family markers. I mean, even just the objective markers, not to even mention her relationship with her children, her caring for her children, her love for her children. I mean, not to even mention those intangible ties. If you just objectively looked at her life and measured it. And this is what our message out there to your audience and people is as we sit here today. Now, as we talk to you today, we are all three here in Washington, D.C. And the reason that we're here is because we come up and we lobby for changes in the laws. You did mention early on that this just doesn't seem to be a headliner. It just doesn't seem to be in the news. But, as we were here today in Washington, two things popped up on the headlines. The first one was the increase of fentanyl and the increase of suicide related to drug abuse was a headline in the Washington Post. And then on national network TV was a headliner that twice as many children are in poverty than there were pre-pandemic. We know that of all the 700,000 children removed from their homes, only about 12% of those children are removed because of physical or sexual abuse. The other 87% are in a category called neglect, and 36% of the children that are removed from the homes of parents involve substance abuse. And here we are. We're headlining substance abuse. Congress is passing laws related to the opioid crisis, and nobody is saying what is the impact of the family. And Maureen's going to talk to you. She's done a lot of work with trauma and how what we are really doing, the net result, is really perpetuating that problem.
You're listening to Nia 2X Radio, the voice of the people, and our guest, Brenda Johnson, Connie Regulli, Maureen O'Neill Davis. And if you heard it from the top, you probably can't believe your ears. Or your mind is probably like most of us. It wonders, oh, Miss Brenda Johnson, she had to do something. See, this is the point of this program. She didn't do anything. She is described as her attorney has described her. She was just you. That's why we want you to listen and to learn and to get involved, because nobody wants to wear her shoes. And it shows the testament of strong women again and again and again and again. To have your children ripped away from you unexpectedly and not know where the baby is. So if we're talking about the mothers right now and the fathers right now, what about the children? What about the children who process on their own level? Where is mommy? Where is daddy? And why aren't they coming to get me? And I can tell you, Miss Brenda Johnson has been on the trail of rescue help to get her children returned to her. We're going to take a quick break, say thank you to a sponsor, and come back, get more information, because you have power. You have it, I have it, we have it. We have power when we get the issues clearly, understand the issues clearly, and understand that voting is one avenue that carries power. Because if they're going to be legislators, if you're going to legislate and govern our lives, we want to vote for those that legislate and govern properly, and anything that goes along with that. Keep it right here. I'll be right back in a moment. Are you sick and tired of contractors coming to your homes, robbing you blind? I know I am. Well, our dreams are not dreams anymore. KD Contractors, in the business of home repair, minor and major needs, are experts, reliable, and mostly affordable. KD Contractors are in the DMV. That's D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. They do it all except HVAC work. They do roofing, power washing, plumbing, painting, floors, you name it, they do it. They do it right, and it's refreshingly affordable. Call. Get your no-cost estimate. Don't put it off. Call today. 202-910-1414, KD Contractors. And now back to our guests who are telling us how the system that we pay our tax dollars to is working and what we have to do to get them to work far better. We have, if you're just tuning in, Miss Brenda Johnson, who has had her children removed without any hint. And it's just, it makes me angry. As she explained, she was away from home regardless of where she was. Here these authorities come to her home and don't tell her that they're going to take your children. Let's go to you, Miss Maureen O'Neill Davis, as Attorney Regulli said, that your work and your input. Let's hear a little more about your work and input, if you don't mind, please.
Again, thank you to talk about this important issue. You know, it can happen to anyone. Your children can be taken if there's a false allegation. If the school personnel calls in an allegation against you, and many of these allegations are very subjective, as Attorney Regulli had mentioned. You know, 15% or less of children who wind up in foster care are there because of genuine abuse, which means 85% are there because of something referred to as neglect, and neglect is subjective. Social workers and folks who work with children make these allegations all the time. When we come alongside a family as an advocate, we are better able to help a family navigate a child welfare investigation, for instance. When that knock at the door comes and a social worker comes in and says, we're here to investigate an allegation against you, and if this doesn't go well, we're going to take your children. Well, the immediate response by any competent, loving, nurturing parent is to react defensively and protect their children. Unfortunately, social workers who work for the child welfare systems often see that as you are unhinged and you are not competent to raise your children. And so that narrative that they begin to create about who you are as a parent, who you are as a person, starts off in a very negative way, and they begin to develop a very concerning report against you. When an advocate can be present alongside, typically we're able to keep the parent more calm. We are able to explain how the process of an investigation works. We're able to help them deliver information in a more valuable way. And consequently, what the social worker investigator walks away with is a healthier, more valuable impression of who you are as a parent and a person. And what we see a lot are these allegations rooted in substance abuse and other addiction-like behavior. And what we know to be true is that when children are removed from parents, even if there is some small reason to think that there is an issue going on, the impact of attachment disruption, the impact of that trauma on the child of being removed, is so deep and sets that child up on a trajectory of not being able to trust, not being able to form healthy attachments, not feeling lovable or valuable in their own life, and not feeling like they belong. So what we actually do is harm children in the process of removal. What we advocate for in Washington is the ability for families to have an advocate alongside them to help make sure that the investigative process goes in a more favorable way in an effort to protect children. Protect children from unnecessary early trauma and separation from their caregiver, their parents. We want to make sure that family integrity and child well-being are the priorities of child protective services, not parent policing. If there is a genuine issue with a family and it is around abuse, something that needs to be investigated by police, then that needs to happen. Who we advocate for are those families that really have done absolutely nothing wrong, or they're a family that needs services, and we help them to better communicate that to investigators with the goal of maintaining that family's integrity, getting any services in place they may need, and making sure that children are not unnecessarily traumatized by removal.
Absolutely. Excellent. Laws. Now, Attorney Regularly is calling and advocating laws from Tennessee and you yourself from Connecticut. And I would imagine each state has different laws that regulate. What is the difference? Would that happen in your state? A parent is at home and they are told to leave the home for whatever reason. And then when the parent returns home the same day, the child or children are gone. How would Connecticut handle that, or is it similar to Tennessee?
So every state is similar and every state is different. The way federal laws are implemented and the way state laws are created are all subject to the legislators and the values of that state. And so what I can tell you is, Brenda's story is not unique. I cannot tell you that her exact story happens in Connecticut, but I can tell you that there are families that I've worked with directly who have had similar experiences where they did not know that being investigated was going to lead to their children's removal. They did not understand that what they did was actually not illegal and was actually quite natural for parenting, but the child welfare system interpreted what the outcome of an action was as being either unsafe or neglectful in some way. And so,
Can you give us an example where a parent, either you or Attorney Regularly, a parent was not aware that I'm gonna knock you into tomorrow. You know, you say things you can't knock anybody into tomorrow. Somebody hears it, then they call and start reporting neglect. Can you give us a reality example of what you just said, that some of the things are interpreted different from the so-called professionals and from family members? Because we all say things. You say things to your husband. He says things to you. It's not literally, but the system with mothers and fathers seem to be taking it literal.
So I'll give you two slightly different examples with different outcomes. We had a family who an educational person at school called the care line and reported that a child was wearing the same clothes every day and their hair wasn't done. I think they're living in poverty. This resulted in an investigation. The investigator came out to the home. The family had to justify the fact that their young daughter, who was elementary school age, didn't like to change her clothes all the time, and she had lots of clothes that looked identical, but that they got washed every night. So although she was wearing the same clothes every day, or mostly every day, they were getting washed every night. And she also was putting mousse in her hair, and she didn't know how to do it really well yet, so it looked very disheveled and like it wasn't being washed, but in fact she was taking a shower every night and just not real skilled at using products yet. And so that investigation, because that family had an attorney and had an advocate with them, that resulted in an unsubstantiation. But because they had had a previous investigation, that could have gone very differently. We had another family where the mom had just given birth to her fifth child. She was recovering from a C-section, and a social worker came by to do a well check. The social worker observed two of the other children picking something up off the floor and putting it in their mouths. So she believed that the children didn't have any food and was eating food off the floor. She directed that mom to have her children stay at family members' homes for a couple of days so that she could rest from her C-section. Meanwhile, that social worker filed a neglect petition, and all five of her children, including the infant, were taken into foster care. In that particular case, the parents' termination of parental rights ensued. At least one of those five children was harmed in foster care. And at the end, that mom did leverage a lawsuit against the state, but she never did get her children back. So we were experiencing a variety of situations that usually stem from something that does not look like neglect at all, but can be spun into a narrative that shows the parent in a very negative, neglectful light, when in fact, if you look at the circumstances directly, there was no neglect at all.
I see. Brenda, you mentioned that one of your children, in the process of being taken, had a broken arm. Could you elaborate a little bit about that? How in the world did that happen? And is there any compensation to you as the mother of that child? You talk about neglect. How in the world did a child have their arm break?
Okay, so in April, my 14-year-old was alleging abuse in a foster parent's home, and we escalated that all the way up to the FBI headquarters to let them know. And I'm assuming that the FBI contacted the foster family or DCS in Tennessee, because then they were removing my daughter away from her brothers. And she told me, "Mommy, if I'm removed, they're either going to hurt the baby or possibly kill him, because they have been putting him in a closet, causing him to have seizures, even placing him in a dog cage." And so I learned that his arm was broken on August the 17th, because I requested his medical records from his pediatrician, and his arm was broken on June the 27th. But nobody from DCS, nobody from any organization that's affiliated with DCS or my kid's case contacted me, not even my private attorney at the time.
That's crazy. Attorney regularly, what are her rights? Once she heard that, because there are a lot of mothers and fathers, guardians, they could be grandparents. Some of them are not strong. Just for whatever reason, they could have an ailment themselves. As Miss Brenda Johnson is exemplifying, the average person just couldn't stand up on 2 feet of what not only has happened to her, but what is happening to her. But before you answer it, you know I got to say thank you to another sponsor. But I want to know, what are her rights when we come back, when she found out the horrors she just explained to us, a baby put in a closet and all this crazy stuff after they took her children. Stand by. We'll come right back to Miss Connie regularly to answer that. She is an attorney. And, again, this show is to help all of us. You may hear of similar situations, and God knows you don't want it to happen to you. Keep it right here, Near 2X Radio, the voice of the people, at www.blackonblackunity.com. We'll be back in a moment. Tri-State Funeral Services is the one to call when your family is in need of compassionate, professional, sensitive care in your greatest hour in need. Tri-State Funeral Services, 1505 Kenilworth Avenue, Northeast Washington, D.C. They dedicate their services offering military funeral honors free of charge and mandated by law for eligible veterans. Pre-planning is another feature Tri-State Funeral Services offers. It allows everyone to create your own unique life celebration, reflecting your wishes and desires. If you move, your pre-planning is transferable to any funeral home in the United States. Give Tri-State Funeral Services a call to hear the other comforting services they have available. Phone 202-882-1202. Going back to our guest, we have Brenda Johnson, we have Maureen O'Neill Davis, and we have Connie Regularly. And, of course, they're here telling us the reality where we would want to get involved, those that are calling to put more justice into the system. Again, you have more power than we are aware of. We all do. So let's go back to Attorney Regularly. And we just heard Brenda Johnson explain how she even heard about the atrocity to her child while in custody of a adopted family. Attorney Regularly, what would her rights be? How could she be helped in that type of problem? Or does can she sue, in other words, and be compensated for what has happened to her and the child?
Well, you know, suing a state agency is extremely difficult. Unfortunately, we have some gaps in our Constitution and our Bill of Rights that really strip some of our rights instead of protect them, and you can't really sue them. Your listeners, about civil rights, the impact of civil rights in this process. So if your listeners would just imagine for a minute that they're walking down the street on an ordinary day, minding their own business, and a car stops, and they get thrown into the back seat of a car, and they get driven 200 miles away to a stranger's home and dumped off in some stranger's doorstep and left there. Now, as an adult, I mean, most people, of course, their first thought is that is so absolutely ridiculous that I can't even imagine it. But that is exactly what happens to these children. In one of my clients, when they picked up her daughter, her daughter had never been separated from her mother. She was 12 years old. She had a disability, and they put her in a car and took her 200 miles from her home, from her mom. I mean, they took everything away from her. She'd been a cheerleader. She'd been in 4-H. She had friends that she went swimming with. She had her favorite teachers at school. They absolutely stripped everything because of false allegations against the mom that she was dealing drugs, and, of course, she was not. But for 10 months, They held that child in the foster care system. She was in 8 homes and 4 schools, and then they dumped her off at home and left her at home, never even gave her any counseling or therapy to reunite her effectively with her mother. Now, what are the rights? So in the Fourth Amendment, we have a guarantee against unlawful search and seizure. And these children, the parents have a due process right, which means that they have a right to go to court and be heard, which in Brenda's case has just been totally bastardized, I will tell you. But anyway, her child has a right against the unlawful seizure, all of her children, especially her 2-year-old baby. So, I certainly hope, and, my message out there to these people who've done these things is that, we can have the ability to bring that child, make that child, these children whole by raising their rights. And, and before we lose our time today, again, my appreciation for this, and I do want to also talk to your audience about the results of foster care on our nation. And I know Maureen has spoke to this a little bit, but she can talk about it a little bit more. And I mean, what happens to children when they go to foster care, and what are the results of them when they age out? And if you would like to hear a little bit more about that, we'd love to share that.
Well, we do. We don't use profanity on our station by no degree. But we're not going to emphasize on that. We're going, and it makes you want to cuss out everybody. I'm not kidding. We're going to stay on the focus, which is a good point you just brought up, because there have been rumors, and they're very strong rumors in the street, about foster care, adoptions, and we need to pull the cover back. These ladies that are on our show today are here in Washington, D.C. I am happy to say they're not visiting the Frederick Douglass home today, the White House, and the other monuments that bring millions to Washington, D.C. No, they're up on Capitol Hill. They are up with the legislators, making sure the people that can assist and change laws, that they are extremely well heard, understood, so that they can help others to be preventable, to have this situation preventable. You don't want to go through this. You don't want to say to yourselves, oh, yeah, if it happened to me, I'll know. No, what you want to do is please continue to listen. Become an advocate. Get more information. Take it to your church. Take it to your mosque. Take it to your place of worship. We need these conversations more than we realize, because if we cannot protect the children, this affects our future. Because getting Ms. Johnson's children returned to her is one phase. After they come back to her, we sincerely pray, and I believe that they will, because this group is relentless. They're going to work by the letter of the law to make sure that happens. But what happens when they come back? The real work begins. For the children to feel secure again. Because if you think Brenda Johnson was shocked, we can only imagine the trauma, the shock, the horror, the unbelief that the children are going through even to this day. So, yes, Ms. Maureen O'Neill Davis, please tell us in your own words and to your own preference about the adoption agency and what have you in Washington, D.C. What do you want to see changed?
Well, one thing I'd like to see changed is fewer children adopted out to strangers, and those children, if they do go into foster care, return to their parents. When children are in a position to experience this kind of attachment disruption, their life trajectory tends to not be very good. These are the kids that wind up in jail as adults, homeless. These are kids that have difficulty getting jobs. Typically, they do not go on for higher education. Even my own kids were taken. So my background in coming into this work was that I was actually in the entertainment industry. And when I met and married my husband, we adopted a little boy through a private placement. And when he was 9 months old, my husband's sister was murdered via domestic violence in front of their two daughters. We stepped up and adopted our nieces as our own. And what I came to understand was the significant early trauma they experienced of witnessing violence, losing their mom, that loss and grief, that attachment separation, has set both of them up to walk through life differently. And our youngest daughter, her needs have been quite complex. And a child's ability to self-regulate, to feel good about themselves, to know that they belong, to feel safe and trust, is all rooted in how that initial relationship with their parents, their primary caregivers, and sometimes their adoptive parent when they're adopted at birth, what that relationship grows, how it grows, what it feels like. And when that's disrupted, when that connection to safety, security, and love is ripped apart, what that does to a child is quite profound. There's a lot of science to support that the impact to the child's brain can look and act a lot like physical trauma. So if you can imagine a child being in a car accident and withstanding physical head trauma, the impact to the brain and the brain's development is very similar to what we see in traumatized kids. So I work with families that their kids have experienced attachment disruption from a lot of different sources, but the foster care system is one of the most profound culprits of attachment disruption impact for our kids. I talk about this because what we know is school shooters, for instance, a lot of school shooters have had very traumatic beginnings, foster care, disrupted attachment. They don't feel like they can trust or belong to a community. And certainly we want the connection between the impact of the foster care system, the impact of attachment disruption on our children, and what that looks like on the other side when they are in their late teens, 20s, and 30s and trying to navigate life. It's a very difficult road. We sincerely believe that the more families we can keep together, that family integrity along with supports is so vitally important to making a difference on this front.
Well, let me offer my sincere condolences to what you shared about your family and the tragedy. Indeed, I'm very sorry to hear that. Let me also, yes, ma'am, go to Brenda Johnson. Brenda, it takes a unique human being to weather this storm, determined and righteously walking with God on a very difficult trail, the trail that you're on. What would you tell other parents? A lot of people, I mean, the average person, you know, you turn to something illicit for comfort in so many different ways. You turn the wrong way. You don't even see a way. The system is against me. I don't have hope. I don't know what to do. I don't know how to do. Please tell the parents or guardians your advice of what they can do to get on the trail to get their children returned to them. And then we'll talk about a few other things after then. Ms. Brenda Johnson.
I guess from my experience living through it, my first thing that I would tell all parents, tell everybody, do not call DCS or CPS on your family members, on your neighbors, on your friends over anything that's like minor, like an argument or a disagreement. My second thing I would tell parents, do not open a door for DCS or CPS, do not talk to them. If you do communicate with them, record everything. If they tell you that you cannot record, still record. If they're going to threaten you with a court order from a judge, let them go get that court order from that judge and go through the lengthy process of filing it in the courts and showing up to court to go before a judge. From my experience, I don't wish this on anybody. It's very disheartening. It's very detrimental to my health. And like I say, I'm out here to speak not just for myself and my children, but for all the children across our nation. And I want to help to prevent this from happening unnecessarily to many people across the United States that this is happening to and across the world.
Absolutely. Attorney Regularly, I want to make it clear that there are agencies that are sincere. There are some legitimate reasons that a child is removed from the home. But I also want people to remember these advocates are not out to just shut the entire system down, certainly to change it, and I'm in favor of that. But we want to be fair that some of the system does its job. But the growing problem is just like Ms. Brenda Johnson. How are you doing your job? Did they need a warrant to take her out, although they came with a different warrant in her story? But can DPS attorney Regularly just come to my door and decide they're going to remove my children? I mean, what are my rights? I know, as we stated earlier, different state laws, but what should be done in your thinking when?
Yeah, thank you.
Go ahead, ma'am.
Sure, thank you. And we've talked a lot about the process and the effect, but you know, as we're closing out tonight, it's important that the listeners understand the money. So this whole system is set up for a monetization of children at many, many different levels. For instance, Brenda Johnson's children are worth to the state somewhere in the neighborhood of $1,500 per month for each child. Well, right there is $4,500 a month. And then, of course, the baby is the voucher, there's daycare vouchers and stuff that they give them for the baby, so that's extra tax dollars. And then the whole education system is set up so that schools get a base rate for children to attend, and if they label that child as a foster child, there's another 25% bonus that they get on top of that. So the layers of money that have been used to monetize our children, and which is why they want to keep children in this process. So the Title IV-E money, which is really the root of what got us together and why we are here, is Title IV-E money. And when I say Title IV, that would be your Social Security money that everybody pays their Social Security, is then funding the foster care system. And it is our federal tax dollars go back to the state and fund these state programs. And it is pretty much a dollar-for-dollar match with the state funds. It's a use-it-or-lose-it scheme, so they have to use it every year. It's never subject to government shutdowns or sequesters, so it's a guaranteed source. And in every single state, and even though I'm in Tennessee, my organization, Family Forward Project, is nationwide, and I work with people all over. All of the state agencies have become a very huge bureaucracy, and those huge bureaucracies have a lot of employees, and the way they fund and pay those employees and keep up their payroll is to keep children in the foster care system. And then the foster care system is operated by private companies. So it's very similar to what has happened with our prison system, with our military system. As heartfelt and as hard as it is for us to do the work we do at the emotional and psychological level, the real root of evil
is the way the funding scheme is set up. So we've been in D.C. We've been trying to this funding scheme started in like 19, really started in the 60s, but it was passed by Congress in 1974. And we've been under this treacherous scheme now for 50 years, and it's not working, but we are having difficulties making changes in that area. And that's why we are specifically asking that Congress pass a single issue family advocate bill so that any state that's getting federal dollars to operate their agency is required to provide the family an advocate. If when Brenda stepped into this situation and they took her children, if they would have said to her, you are entitled to an advocate who will explain this to you better from a citizen standpoint, I can guarantee you she would not be where she is today. She would not be here in Washington today because she would be home with her three children, including her baby.
Excellent. And we want to get more into the Family Advocate Bill information. Got to say thank you to a sponsor, because without our sponsors, we would not have our program. And we'll be right back. This is our final sponsor for the day, and we thank them. S&B Movers are the very best to call when you need to move or simply have large furniture you need hauled away. Their service is reliable, affordable, and dependable. In today's market, with escalating prices all around us, S&B Movers are keeping their prices reasonable, and their services remain exceptional and professional. S&B Movers serve from as far north as New York and as far south as Georgia. That's right. Call the professionals, S&B Movers. Call them at 240-507-7103. So we've heard some very, very profound information, and we have three herons, as far as I'm concerned, to take their life-giving energy to come all the way to Washington, D.C., where laws are signed into law and amended and changed. This is where, from demonstration, you go to legislation. This is what the Honorable Reverend Dr. Al Sharpton says. Yes, many came to Washington, D.C. a few weeks ago to the Continuation March. It wasn't a commemoration. It was the Continuation March, but the very next Monday, the Honorable Reverend Sharpton was in the White House with President Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris and other civil rights leaders, because they know just demonstrating is one part of the effort, but changing the laws, it can be done. And remember, although it doesn't seem like it, it's supposed to be about we the people, for the people, and by the people. We are the people. But if we don't enforce anything, if we don't demand anything, if we don't ask for anything, what their mom and them tell us, that closed mouths don't get fed. You have to step up, like Brenda Johnson, attorney Connie Regularly, and Miss Maureen O'Neill Davis. They're stepping up because they can see the light at the end of the tunnel. We do not work for the government. They work for us. It is we who give them their jobs in a vote. That's how they get their jobs. But if we're apathetic, if we'll, I'll do it tomorrow, or somebody else is going to take care of it, they are taking clear advantage of our misdirected attention instead of what is critically important. When it comes to children, nothing else matters. They are our future. And without healthy, stable, well-minded, kind-hearted, strong little children turning into adults, then we're going to have a major problem in the future as if we don't have one now, and we can stop this problem. Let's get our contact information. Don't just hear the show. Please get in contact with these women who care to share their information. There has been alleged statements on DPS. We're not coming down on all of them, but certainly they have enough information to go to Washington, D.C. with the statistics, the research that they have conducted, and they're not going to stop. We're women. We're not going to stop until the job is done. So you can start out, ladies, anyone who wants to give out their contact information so that people can get in touch with you and be able to assist or be assisted from your service.
So this is Maureen, and I do have an advocacy organization in Connecticut. We do support families across the country by way of a virtual parent support group for those families raising children who have experienced attachment disruption. You can find us at our website, www.ffact.org. There is a link there to register for our support group. We're also available as advocates to come alongside families virtually. So if a family is experiencing a child welfare investigation, they're raising children who have already experienced early trauma or attachment disruption, we would be a good fit to be part of their meetings that happen during the investigative process to ensure that they work the way they're supposed to work, that they are information gathering, that the family understands what's happening. We can ask some questions and help the family understand the process better. We can also help them after the social worker leaves to understand next steps. So we can do that regardless of what state somebody is in. And some attachment and trauma parent mentoring services, too, to help families who are struggling with a child who might be emotionally dysregulated, having challenging behaviors. We can help give them some tips and strategies that can help during the day with that child's behaviors. And we also do come along families in special education meetings as well.
Okay. You gave out all your numbers and emails or what have you?
So my email is familyforwardact@gmail.com. That's our general mailbox. The website, again, is www.ffact.org. There's a contact sheet there, and folks can submit to me via that contact page.
Attorney Regularly?
Yes, thank you. So it's Connie Regularly, and it's spelled R-E-G-U-L-I. And anybody who is involved in social media on Facebook, they can find our group called the Family Forward Project. We also have, a website for our nonprofit foundation, which is familyforwardfoundation.com. And they can go to that website. They can contact me through there. And I do have an advocacy phone line of 615-500-4407.
Outstanding. Outstanding. Brenda Johnson, I want to thank you, encourage you, and I plan to stay involved as much as I can to this situation that you brought to light so that we can expand the good news and expand how the system should be run. Now, which lady wants to talk about the importance of voting before we hang up? And I do want to disclaimer again that we're not smashing on DPS or the Child Protective Service as a whole. But speaking of holes, speaking of ditches, speaking of need some reform, yes, indeed, they certainly do. But I'm sure that every child removed, each and every one of them, are not part of what is being found out, but too many of them are, and one is too many. We're hearing parts of Ms. Johnson's circumstances, and it speaks volumes. I can say that. I'll let you ladies have your closing remarks in a few minutes left. It'll be about 20, 30 seconds apiece. Go ahead, Ms. Johnson, you first.
Thank you, Nia 2X, for having me on your show, for letting me be the voice for families that's being affected, and to also be the voice for the children, because children do have rights, and to also to help educate, prevent, and then encourage the people that's actually going through it and living this day-to-day nightmare like I am. So I appreciate you taking the time to listen to me and let me be a voice.
You're welcome.
And I would like to add to that as a kinship adoptive parent, it's really important to me to make sure that kin who step up to raise their grandchildren, their nieces and nephews, that they understand that they're not alone in this journey, and there are advocates like myself who understand that it is challenging and you are not alone. And all the families that we work with, you know, trust in us. We are here to make a hopefully valuable change in our child welfare system. We do know that some children do need to be removed because of abuse, and we don't want to, negate that. But too many families face this situation who really it's unwarranted and unnecessary and doing unnecessary harm to our children.
All right, Attorney Regulie.
Yes, and again, Nia, thank you so much for everything that you do and for allowing us to be here. And really my closing message to the people in this country and all over the world, wherever we can reach, is that our children are placed in our trust on this planet. And our trust means, you know, God is entrusting us with children to raise them and to do the best we can. And parenting is not a science. It's an art. And it is, we struggle to, as we look at these young humans that are brought into this world and placed in our care, that we give them the best that we can. And even if your child is not affected, you need to remember as your child grows up in this world, they're going to be living in a world where there are going to be children who have gone through the foster system all around them. And they're going to see an increase in failures, in social failures, if we don't really get to the heart and the root of social problems.
Thank you. Thank you, ladies, for coming to Nia2X Radio, the voice of the people. Please keep us informed as we take on every issue under the sun that specifically deals with black people, specifically, but all people, and black people specifically, because we're at the bottom of the bottom, over the bottom, hidden away at the bottom. We know it. And we have to do something about it. But it doesn't mean we're anti anyone else that finds themselves in a disadvantaged position. So you're all welcome back. I thank you for a wealth of information and for your courage, your spirit, your determination, and your focus is to help, aid, support, and to bring a system that has unjust ways of handling a situation. And it took individuals to stop their lives, the two advocates to stop their lives. And Ms. Brenda Johnson's life was severely interrupted. And it takes advocates and attorneys and people of goodwill and concern to do something, not just aid in our conversation, oh, that's terrible, and then we cut on the TV. No, we have to be activists, and we can bring the peace and order to our world, our reality, one step at a time. Keep it right here for the next program here on Nia2X Radio. I want to say thank you to the three guests, Ms. Brenda Johnson, Attorney Connie Regularly, and Ms. Maureen O'Neill Davis. I want to say thank you to our sponsors. We really appreciate you, and thank you. Thank you to the audience for you listening and prayerfully being compelled to do something, to get in on the action. And thank you to you, Queen, our engineer who makes it all run. Stay peaceful. Keep it right here on Nia2X Radio, our next program coming up in just a moment. Peace, love, and God's justice to everyone.